We are in the music studio, the Steve Nelson Music Studio, downstairs from the usual Jefferson Exchange home base, so we can talk about music. Here we have room for a few instruments and players, and that's what we have with the members of the Mill City String Quartet, which Mill City, Minneapolis, but members of the quartet are scattered in several cities. They are in the Rogue Valley for the Brit Festival Education Program, with their residency wrapping up with final school visits today. The members of the Mill City String Quartet, from the left, if you're reading along with me, Erica Hoogeveen is on violin. Thank you for joining us today, and a founding member of the group. Good to see you.
That's right. Thank you.
Hulda Niles is also on violin, also a founding member of the group. Hulda, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much.
Valerie Little is on viola, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks. Good morning.
And Ruth Marshall is on cello, and the newest member of the Mill City String Quartet, evidently.
That's right. Thank you.
So what is the newest member, though? How does that count in terms of time, though?
Well, Erica and Hulda were founding members of this quartet in 2007, and I joined in 2015. So it's, this is my fifth year in the quartet, but I'm still definitely the newest member.
All right, well, I was asking about hazing things and stuff like that. You don't call you a rookie anymore. It's not quite like that. It's not like the softball team I was talking to earlier today. So for the two founding members, Erica and Hulda, talk about the formation of the quartet now 13 years ago.
Well, Eric and I went to college together at the University of Minnesota, and we had the same violin teacher, Sally O'Reilly, and we liked each other so much that we decided to continue doing chamber music together outside of school as a way to keep the music fresh and alive for us. Mm-hmm. So we started it with a few of our friends, and as they moved on to other jobs, we found wonderful Valerie and Ruth.
Mm-hmm. You all seem to have obligations to other ensembles, and these seem to be multiples. I mean, can you count on one hand, or is it generally getting into two hands, each of you, for all the different ensembles you're members of? Valerie?
Yeah, I think everybody has kind of their own collection of things that they do outside of Mill City String Quartet. Erica is a concertmaster of a local community orchestra, and Hulda plays quite a bit with the Minnesota Opera. Ruth is newest to town, so she's playing all kinds of interesting freelance gigs and is a very talented teacher. And then I work in the Minnesota Orchestra's music library.
I noticed that. Music librarian, or orchestra librarian, is that the term?
Correct.
Uh-huh. And what does that mean?
That means that we round up all the music that the orchestra needs and put in any markings that the conductor or leaders of the string sections would want, and just kind of keep order on stage for everybody.
Sounds like a lot of detail work.
Yeah.
But does it feel musical to you as you're doing it? Obviously, you're somebody who can read music really well, so you probably can hear what you're making notations on.
Absolutely, and all orchestra librarians usually have at least a master's in music and an instrument, so we're very engaged musicians as well.
So how often is the quartet together? I'll put this one to Ruth, since you haven't had a chance to speak much yet.
So we have a full season that we produce ourselves in the Twin Cities. This year we have four concert cycles that we're playing multiple times. And in addition to that, we do lots of outreach activities. So for example, we came out here specifically because we wanted to play for the students in the Rogue Valley, and to have Kay Hilton invite us out through the Brit Festival has been wonderful. In addition to that, we have been in residence with Minnesota Public Radio for a few years now, doing outreach activities with local elementary, middle, and now high schools. And we have, a residency with the Schubert Club in St. Paul this year, and also the St. Cloud Chamber Music Society. So in addition to our own year-long season, we do other things as well.
Are you all teachers as well? Do you all teach your instruments, Hulda?
I actually only teach my daughter, Matilda. She's 9, and I helped her learn together. We do Suzuki together, and she has a teacher at school because no one really wants to learn from just mom.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because I did meet a woman a while ago who said she wanted to learn from her mother because she knew her mother was so good.
Yeah. Mm. I think that's maybe where the desire for violin started. And it's nice to get kind of this instructions from a different teacher, and then we're more... we can work on it together, so it's fun.
So in the educational visits obviously come naturally to you. It's a regular part of what you do. I wonder if they're somewhat different with the younger students who are not necessarily playing or learning music. Erica?
Yeah, with the younger students, we just have to make sure that we gear the type of things that we talk about with them to their ages and make sure that we explain things well. We try to engage the audience in a slightly different way, ask them questions, help them to listen through things. When we've worked with high school students, especially with the NPR program back in the Twin Cities, then we get a chance to work more one-on-one, hands-on kind of thing with them, coach their groups, do sectionals with their orchestras, do master classes, and then we, you know, it's a much closer relationship with them.
NPR in this case is Minnesota Public
Radio.
And I want to point out to our listeners that if you're not aware of the vast amount of stuff that comes out of Minnesota Public Radio and its offshoot American Public Media, it's a huge amount. This is like one of the giants of public radio across the country. So the fact that you guys have a relationship with that organization speaks volumes about what you do, and certainly makes our job easier, because here you go, coming into a public radio station to play some music. I want to talk about some of the other programs you do. Music by Minors, that's a really interesting sounding program. What's it about?
So that's a charity in Southern Florida. We have a connection because my parents live down there, and they wanted us to come down and do a concert, and we wanted it to be a benefit concert. So Music by Minors collects money to buy instruments to make them available to children who could not otherwise afford instruments. So it's a really lovely organization that we were happy to help out.
And you just did a residency in Florida, too, as well. So did you get a chance to do Music by Minors then there?
This time we actually were just performing at a church, making it, you know, open to the public, and, you know, had a 100 or so people there, and just a lovely community that we're glad to be part of.
You mentioned playing at a church. I mean, there are lots of different places you play. I was impressed to see that everything from churches to schools to, you know, radio studios, obviously. I mean, it's nice to be a string quartet because you don't have to lug there's no bass player for one thing. That helps, I guess. But cemeteries, is that right, too? You play the cemetery program?
Yeah, we did play. There's a lovely venue, actually, at the Lakewood Cemetery in Minneapolis, which was, as a newcomer to the Twin Cities, I was very surprised. I thought, is this weird? No, it was beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Huge audience, a beautiful place to play. And I did want to mention another place that we frequently play is the Shakopee Correctional Facility in Minnesota. And that's actually one of our favorite places to play for the women who are incarcerated there. We've played there for several years in a row and always have a really wonderful time talking about the music and sharing it with them.
I have many more questions about the prison residency. We're getting up to a break here. Ruth Marshall is on cello with the Mill City String Quartet. You heard before that Huldah Niles, who's on violin, also one of the founders of the group. Erica Hogeveen is the other violinist and also founder of the group. And Dr. Valerie Little, the only PhD in the group. Oh, she made a face. She's on viola. We'll come back and visit more with the members of the Mill City String Quartet, and you'll actually get to hear them play some music on the other side of a break. We'll have to push their vocal microphones out of the way, and they'll get to the music part. But we'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange with the Mill City String Quartet and you in a minute 20. Thank you for listening. We are live in the Steve Nelson Music Performance Studio downstairs from the usual Jefferson Exchange home here at JPR to visit with the members of the Mill City String Quartet. Huldah Niles, Erica Hogeveen, Valerie Little, and Ruth Marshall. Huldah and Erica are founding members of the group from 13 years ago. Ruth and Valerie, a little newer, but obviously very established on their instruments as well. And rather than try to have them talk and play music at the same time, or roughly thereabout, we have put them into a music segment here all their own. So the vocal microphone are pushed out of the way for the moment, and they will now play Caroline Shaw's Punctum here on JPR. Thank you. This is the Jefferson Exchange. That is the Mill City String Quartet with a playing of Caroline Shaw's Punctum. They're going to swing their vocal microphones back in front of them now so we can get to talk to them again. The members of the group are Huldah Niles and Erica Hogeveen on violins, Valerie Little on viola, Ruth Marshall on cello. Ruth Marshall also has some experience with the Brit Festival Orchestra, and they are here because they are part of the Brit Festival Education Program, visiting schools around the Rogue Valley through today. Thanks so much for being here, all of you, once again. And I've often marveled at how string quartets do what they do and their ability to stay in sync with one another. But that piece in particular, it must be fantastically hard to stay in sync because there's so much going on. There are so many changes of rhythm and all the other things that are going on there. Tell us about that, Erica.
Yeah, it's very interesting because she uses a lot of polyrhythm in that piece. That's something we've talked about a lot with the students that we've been playing for. It's fascinating. And I read an interview with her recently where she talked about that and how her dad used a lot of polyrhythm just in fun at home. And is it okay if I quote a little bit of that
interview?
Absolutely,
sure.
She said, "He's a doctor and he loves music very much. He also has this totally delightful, not deliberate way of putting the metronome on and being completely out of sync with it and just continuing on. It's like this wonderful polyrhythm. I remember hearing him every night as a kid, sort of wanting to correct it, then drifting off with that sound in my mind." So we're very used to hearing things that fit together well, like puzzle pieces. That's what makes sense to us. And, you know, just as a culture, I think. And so the difficulty of this piece is there are at times so many different rhythms going on, and we have to communicate really well together in order to make sure that we're still holding it together and keeping the beat steady.
As a musician, I imagine there are any one of a number of pieces you could probably play more or less in your sleep at this point. Valerie Little, this is not one of those, I would think.
No, although this was our 11th performance, what we just played mm-hmm. here for you. So we are getting pretty comfortable with this piece, and we played another string quartet of Caroline's last year quite a bit. But of course, it's certainly different than playing, you know, a well-loved Haydn or Mozart quartet that you would just maybe read with friends very, you know, on the fly.
Tell us a little more about Caroline Shaw then. Where from? Still living, obviously.
Yes, mm-hmm. She was born in 1982.
Wow.
I believe she lives in New York City. Mm-hmm. And she was born into a musical family. Her mother started her at violin at age 2. But she also really liked the voice. She's currently, I believe, still in a vocal ensemble called Room Full of Teeth. And she composed a piece for them that called Partita for 8 Voices that earned her the Pulitzer Prize. And she's the youngest winner of a Pulitzer Prize at 30.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah, that's an amazing piece of music. So, talk about the choices that you make then, not just of this, but I noticed that the other piece that you had told me you want to play later on is also by a woman composer. And we're trying to get past the point in history when we keep saying woman composer, and I get nods of approval from all of you there, because the fact is women have been composing music for a very, very long time. Is it a large part of your repertoire?
Yes, it definitely is. And as we've continued to seek out composers who are female, we've realized this music is amazing. And two of the pieces we won't be playing today are, one is written by Fanny Mendelssohn, who was, you know, living quite a while ago. Another, Grazhnya Batsevits, who was alive in the first part of the 20th century. So there have always, like you said, there have always been women composing. But the next piece we're going to play for you is written by Jennifer Higdon, who is also a living composer. She's 57 years old, living in New York City. Actually, I just wanted to circle back to what you said. You mentioned that I have some experience with the Brit Orchestra. I've been playing with the Brit Orchestra since 2014. And the Brit Festival, since I've been playing, has always brought living composers to the festival. And in particular, Caroline Shaw was here last summer. Unfortunately, I wasn't here. I was having my first child in August, so I missed her. But she's thank you. Hi, Felix. But she is coming back this summer, and she is working on a piece that is specifically for the Brit Festival that will be performed in the Brit Gardens. So for us to be able to interact with a composer through her work, you know, it's so cool to have played her string quartets, and then to get to meet her this summer and play her piece is so special and such a wonderful connection.
So Ruth Marshall, has your time at the Brit Festival Orchestra then been entirely in the Teddy Abrams years as musical director, conductor?
Yes, he and I started the same summer.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. So was it the connection to you that helped lead to the residency for the entire quartet?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so where have you visited and what kinds of responses have you gotten from? First of all, what kind of programs do you present to the students in Rogue Valley schools, and how might you try to gear them to age, location, anything like that?
Well, so we're playing, we've been playing music written by women. So the Caroline Shaw you just heard, we've played for the students. We've also been playing the Jennifer Higdon that you will hear, and also the piece by Betsevich and the piece by Fanny Mendelssohn that I mentioned. And as Erica was mentioning, we try really hard to tailor what we say about the music to the developmental age. And Kay Hilton, the director of Brit Education, is really helpful with that as well, just making sure that we know what to expect with the kids, and helping us figure out what would be appropriate, and meeting ahead of time with the teachers to find out what the students have been learning, so we can connect to whatever they're doing. And the students always respond to the music. I mean, students of any age, little tiny kids up through adult students respond to music. So we have actually a very easy job, I think.
Let's talk about the not easy jobs you've had. Now, I understand, Ruth, you played all the cello sonatas of Beethoven in 48 hours. How many is that?
In one concert, actually. Yeah, so there are five sonatas, mm-hmm. and my duo partner, Garrett Ross, and I, we played all five of them in one concert, and we started learning them 10 years ago and have performed them many, many times, one at a time. But playing them all five together was a magical, strange experience. And very fun. And we did that in honor of Beethoven's 250th birthday, which is this year.
Lots of celebrations. Yeah.
Yes, including one at the Brit Festival Orchestra, which will be Beethoven's Ninth Symphony this summer on the Hill. See you there.
So when you take on one composer like that, I mean, do you want to put Beethoven aside for a while afterward?
Yes and no. I mean, we played that on a Saturday, and on the Friday night, Garrett and I were joined by our friend Robert Hanford and played two of Beethoven's trios. And the next day on Sunday, Valerie joined, and we played two of Beethoven's quartets. So it was a lot of Beethoven that weekend. I played 9 works, and very excited to be working on Opus 131 with the Mill City String Quartet for our next concert cycle coming up in April.
It is the Mill City String Quartet in the studio here. Ruth Marshall, Erica Hogaveen, Valerie Little, Hulda Niles here in the studio with us. They'll come back and play another piece of music when we return from the break. They're here in a residency. You heard from the Brit Festival Education Program. Kay Hilton brought them in. She's enjoying the conversation off in a corner of the studio. So when you see the video on Facebook later in the day, that's the other person in the studio who doesn't have an instrument. Kay Hilton is with us here on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk more with the Mill City String Quartet and hear a piece of music when we return from the break here on the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. Thank you for listening. The program sounds a little different today for a couple of reasons. Number one, we're in a different room. We're in the Steve Nelson Music Performance Studio here at JPR, downstairs from our usual home on the Jefferson Exchange. But because we have the great pleasure of talking with and hearing music from the Mill City String Quartet from the Twin Cities in Minnesota, the members are actually scattered a little more broadly than that, but they're here in the Rogue Valley for a bit of the Brit Music Education Program, a short residency that completes today. The members of the group are from, and this time from right to left, we'll go with Valerie Little on viola, Ruth Marshall on cello, Hulda Niles on violin. She's one of the group's founders, and Erica Hogaveen, who's also on violin and also one of the group's founders. And since we have shoved all their vocal microphones out of the way, we can't possibly ask them any questions right now, but it also means that they get to play some music, and they have chosen for this next selection by the composer Jennifer Higdon. This is called An Exaltation of Larks here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Mill City String Quartet on the Jefferson Exchange, playing an Exaltation of Larks by the composer Jennifer Higdon, which it's just fascinating to watch. I mean, it'd be one thing to hear this piece over the radio. It's something else, again, to watch it in person. There are some techniques in there that I don't even have names for. There's something about, there was a metallic scraping I noticed in the first piece on the cello from Ruth Marshall. Mm-hmm. And then something else that I heard in the violins in this piece this time. Is there a name for that technique?
Yes. Yeah, so the one in the Caroline Shaw piece was we call sole ponticello. So you use the bow over the bridge, and you get a kind of scrapey sound. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'll let you guys say what you did in the Higdon.
Well, we play a lot of harmonics on the instrument, where it rings a different pitch from if you put your finger firmly on the string. Mm-hmm. And it has this almost whistly or maybe like sort of bell-like sound, but it sounds also very much like birds. So Jennifer Higdon really hit it on the head there, putting those in there.
Well, I was looking for a verb to describe this sound. Scraping wasn't working because it wasn't unpleasant like that. I mean, it did have sort of a little whistly sound to it, but very, very unusual. Yeah.
Yep.
How long, in addition to the original training to get good, to get virtuosic at an instrument, does it take to learn additional techniques like that? Or is it the kind of thing that, you know, the teacher says, hey, try this, and poof, in the afternoon you got it?
I think because we all have a lot of experience playing orchestral repertoire, and then, you know, the years of playing quartets, those extended techniques are certainly in our wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. And again, from my experience at the Brit Festival, where we play a lot of new music written currently by living composers, they often ask for these extended techniques because they've kind of blown the lid off of what kinds of sounds string players can make.
Mm-hmm. I want to come back to Hulda Niles on violin. You mentioned the Suzuki method of training, which gets talked about a lot with stringed instruments. What is that, first of all?
It's a wonderful method brought over from Japan. The Prusul family was a big part of bringing that to the U.S., where you learn it first by ear. So they have recordings of all of the songs for the children that they listen to over and over and over again before they even learn how to read music. And it's just a way to memorize your pieces and fully engage your brain in what you're doing, because there's so much going on just with your left and right hand coordination that you don't necessarily need to learn all the reading of the notes right at first. But it works a little better in Japan because they get through the whole system like while they're in grade school. And in America, it's a little more spread out, so maybe you don't get through it until the end of high school. So a lot of kids will learn how to read music a little bit earlier here.
Now, I understand you actually, you played for Dr. Suzuki?
I did. Yeah. It was through the Prusul School of Music. They sent a small group of us over to Japan. And luckily, one of the teachers was Japanese and guided us through the country. I was about 14, and we went to his house. He was in a wheelchair and, you know, at the end of his life. But they wheeled him in, and he just kind of sat there, and we played some of his Suzuki songs. It was really magical. And at the same time, they have a concert every year where they play every single Suzuki song all at once. So they have like 3,000 children or something come into this big arena, and the prince and princess of Japan come to the concert. It's just, it's really neat how they embrace the arts in their culture.
Oh, that is amazing. Yeah. I want to ask some of you who play in non-classical groups, and Valerie, that you're on that list. You play with some non-classical groups?
Yeah, definitely. Through some other, musicians get to know each other in all different communities, and so I've had the opportunity to play with a lot of local to Minneapolis singer-songwriters, but some that are a little more nationally known. So the great rapper and genius Dessa, Jeremy Messersmith, other people I can't remember right now. But yeah, I love playing with some of those bands because you just get to kind of make stuff up, and then you have the drums and the guitar, and it's just a really different kind of feeling.
Is it like where you use a different part of your brain from what the other parts of your music do, or is music music?
I mean, yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they even write stuff down for us. You know, they usually have some ideas in mind first too.
Erica Hogeveen, I wanted to ask you about your playing with non-classical artists, but more than anything else, I want to hear about Jello Slave.
Okay, so that's a local Twin Cities group, mm-hmm. And the community orchestra that I play with is Dakota Valley Symphony. And so for our Pops concert in October, we always find local groups to play with us. And that was one of the groups. And they have two cellos, and then they have two percussionists. And they have one of them is on set, and then the other one plays some very interesting drums, some that I'm not even familiar with. So that was a very fun concert.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I was thinking that you guys are all so busy with music, you wouldn't have time for outside pursuits. But for you, Erica, marathon running and knitting?
Yep. Yeah, I ran my first marathon in October of 2019, and it was a big stretch, and I didn't know how it would go, and I was pleasantly surprised that I made it across the finish line.
Wow, congratulations. Yep. Big year then. So a marathon for you, a child for you. Anything else happened in the last year we need to know about here?
Erica also homeschools all four of her children.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
It's great because the system they use is called CC, Classical Conversations, and one of the schools we visited here is also CC, so it was neat to have that connection.
Mm-hmm. You know, a sense of humor seems to pervade a lot of what you do, and I noticed, and I asked you this off air, but here we go on air, but I noticed you played a concert of the composers Schnitka, Shaw, and Shostakovich, and it made me wonder if you were trying for alliteration.
Yeah. We even called the program Shelter in the Shadows to further the sound.
So this is a lot of fun. I mean, so do you take long breaks? I mean, you're not together all the time, obviously. You live in different cities even.
Well, we do live in different cities, but they're all in the Twin Cities metro area. So between St. Paul and Minneapolis and Minnetonka, we are all, you know, basically 20 minutes away from each other, so which is really nice. And we, you know, we have our quartet schedule for the year, and then we also will see each other at other gigs. Like we all played the opera this fall together.
Electra,
yep. And you know, we see each other quite a bit. We're always at each other's birthday parties. Yeah. All that stuff.
Well, it's good to see you all together. It's been a real treat to have you in the Steve Nelson Performance Studio here at JPR. This is the Mill City String Quartet. Ruth Marshall, Hulda Niles, Erica Hogaveen, and Dr. Valerie Little. Thank you all for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
And that's it for today's exchange. We're online at jeffexchange.org. Our producers, John Baxter and April Ehrlich. John Baxter is also working the microphones in the music studio today. Our student assistant, Randy Babbitt, is in the studio upstairs. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us next time on the Jefferson Exchange, and have a great day. New choral music starts Friday's Jefferson Exchange. Southern Oregon Repertory Singers premiere a work by a local composer. Also in Hour 1, Life After the State Hospital, as described in our Compass Radio segment. In Hour 2, Appreciating Wine the Old-Fashioned Way with the creator of wine, All the Time. That's on Friday's Jefferson Exchange. This morning's program airs again from 8 to 10 this evening on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio.
Welcome to As It Was, Tales from the Mythical State of Jefferson. On July 6, 1915, a baseball excursion train with two passenger cars carrying teams and fans from Grants Pass.